You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up on the SBS On The Money podcast, another day, another record close for the Australian share market. That's despite slowing global growth. And Qantas to shut down its Jetstar Asia operations. We'll have the details and more next. Hello, everyone. It is Wednesday, the 11th of June, 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market closed at another record high, but only just because the ASX 200 ended up 0.06%. And I'll have the details with Josh Gilbert from eToro in a few moments. And I'll ask him why the market continues to hit a record high despite global growth being downgraded by a number of agencies recently, including the IMF and overnight the World Bank. But first, to Qantas, which will close its Singapore-based budget airline Jetstar Asia from the end of July, following a period of financial turbulence, which will see the subsidiary post a $35 million underlying loss for this financial year. And it means 16 intra-Asia routes will be shut down, but also unlock $500 million in capital, which will support its fleet renewal program. 13 Jetstar Asia planes will be redirected to service routes across Australia and New Zealand. For more, Raina Bosch spoke with aviation analyst at Cirium, Ellis Taylor.
Well, Qantas has really cited that costs have been a big driver there. They've said that a number of costs have gone up 200%. And we take that to mean things like maintenance, ground services and so on have really put a lot of pressure on that. This has been a loss-making business. And even in the best of times, it's only eked out a little bit of profit. It hasn't sort of made the margins that other parts of the business have. And so I think really it's probably reached a point where they would have had to make additional investment in it, and they've sort of done the sums and realised that it's not really going to be as beneficial as it may have been previously. Really, this shows that, costs aside, that it's also a very competitive environment in Asia. We've seen big low-cost carriers such as AirAsia, the Lion Air Group out of Indonesia, Vietjet out of Vietnam have really got a large position in that market. They've taken Southeast Asia by storm. And by comparison, Jetstar Asia has been very small. And that's meant that it's been harder to carry some of those costs over. It has for many years really functioned, I guess, as a feeder carrier to Qantas and some of its partner airlines. And that's helped it. But really, it has been a lot more underdeveloped compared to its competitors.
So you brought up competition, and I want to talk about that in just a minute. But first, on the financial side of things, I mean, Qantas has basically said this is going to save them around $500 million, which can be redeployed elsewhere in the business. They've also talked about their fleet renewal and moves towards redirecting some of those planes. Can you talk us through how this is going to feed into Qantas' success in the future?
Yeah, so from what they're saying, it really is about sort of taking some of that capital and putting it towards some of the new aircraft. And these are the ones that are going to fly nonstop between places like Sydney, Melbourne to London and New York, as well as some of the incoming fleet that's going to be replacing their domestic jets. And of course, going into some of the smaller routes up into Asia, things like, you know, the Western Hub in Perth that they've talked about. So really, they're in a situation where they weren't short of capital. Let's be fair. The Qantas Group has access to relatively low-cost debt. They've got strong equity that they can call upon. But I think this was more of a business decision that sort of said, rather than throwing some of that at a relatively subscale business that is going to be limited in its opportunities to grow, can we take that and put that where we know that there's going to be stronger margins, where they're going to be uncontested routes, particularly those ultra long haul routes.
To that point, with 13 of these planes moving into the Australian New Zealand market, what does that mean for things like capacity, and what does it mean for customer cost?
Yeah, so the 13 aircraft moving into the Australian market, some will go into the fly-in, fly-out market in Western Australia, but it seems that most will go just slot straight into the Jetstar Australia and New Zealand market. And that's really should be a net positive for customers. More capacity coming into the market does mean that generally that drives down fares, and it means that we'll see more low-cost destinations will probably open up. We'll see additional capacity on some of those routes coming in. It also means that the fleet will be a little bit older, as the Jetstar Asia aircraft are a bit older, but then in the current circumstance, that's not necessarily a bad thing. They're also fully depreciated, which means that from the cost side of things, they're not as expensive to run as potentially some of the newer jets. So, generally there should be upside for Australia. There will be some in New Zealand as well. There's talk of some of those going into the New Zealand domestic market. And in a market that's really owned by Air New Zealand, that's going to provide some competition there. And the spillover of that is it will probably mean that there'll be some additional seats will go into the Trans-Tasman market as well, particularly from Australia's east coast.
Lastly, Ellis, I wanted to ask you about the timeliness of all of this. I mean, we've got Virgin who is looking to release their IPO in the coming months. Does that factor into this decision at all?
Yeah, look, the timing is interesting, and it really does kind of undercut some of the narrative that Virgin has put out around their IPO, in that suddenly they're going to be facing some added competition from Jetstar at that sort of lower budget fare end of the market. Does it materially affect the IPO? I don't think so. I think this is just something where it will have an impact, and they'll sort of work accordingly. I mean, Virgin and Qantas have both benefited from the fact that they can't get a hold of additional capacity at the moment, and the domestic market, the demand has been strong, so that's naturally just pushed airfares up. And that was always going to change at some point. I guess this sort of probably says that it will change a little bit quicker. But both Qantas and Virgin want to maximize their profits in the current environment. So we're not going to see an explosion of a new fare war. And that should be comfort for investors who are looking at that IPO. It is also that part of the earnings season, I guess, where major companies are taking out the rubbish, to put it crudely. And so for Qantas being able to get this announcement out ahead of the closure of the financial year to be able to flag that there is going to be an impact on that. And then I guess when it gets to announcing their results around August, this will already be accounted for. And so, the bad news is already done in that aspect. It is, obviously with them winding down operations in 31st July, the timing needed to be there to sort of explain why it's happening. It wasn't something that they could hold off. And obviously the decision that they've made has been driven by the finances. And as they go into what is usually a lower travel season in Asia, they were obviously not wanting to hold that out and bleed any more than needed to do. So, whilst the timing's certainly interesting in light of the Virgin IPO, I don't think it's material to it.
That is Rainer Bosch speaking with Ellis Taylor from Cirium.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
Now to the Australian share market, which closed at another record high today. The S&P ASX 200 up, but only just by 0.06%, 8,592. The property sector leading the gains, but IT falling. But it's also happening when global growth prospects appear to be diminishing. The International Monetary Fund downgraded its global growth forecasts a few weeks ago. And today it happened with the World Bank. So why is it happening? For that and more, I spoke with Josh Gilbert, a market analyst at eToro. Josh, another day, another record for the Australian share market. What's driving the ASX 200?
Well, quite simply, Ricardo, it's just this risk on sentiment that we've got at the moment. So, investors are feeling a bit more confident in markets. We're starting to see these trade tensions de-escalate from where we were probably a month ago, and that's given a huge boost to markets. I think, to be clear, though, we aren't sort of out of the woods, right? We've still got these sort of US China tensions ongoing, this sort of, trade war still ongoing, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. We still need, the top dog's approval, right? China, the US, they still got to get sign off from the top, but it's a move in the right direction. And I think from an ASX perspective, although earnings growth for this current fiscal year looks, pretty tepid, fiscal year 26 looks a bit more promising, right? We're looking towards about 6 to 7% earnings growth. Markets are very forward looking, so I think we're looking towards that. And we've also got this backdrop as well of sort of more RBA rate cuts on the way as well. We've already had a couple this year as well, and I think that's really positive for markets, and that's why we're sort of sat back at record highs.
Can you explain to me, though, why the Australian share market is rising and now hitting these new records at a time where we're seeing global growth slow? Just overnight, the World Bank downgraded its expectations for global growth this year and next. So why the disconnect?
Yeah, look, I think given how much uncertainty we have in markets, it is maybe a surprise to us, and I think to investors, whether you've been in markets for 10 years or 10 weeks, it is a bit, a bit worrying, not worrying, but I think in terms of surprising more so. I think there's a couple of reasons for it. Firstly, we've had a, huge rally from the banking sector. That's trading at huge premiums to its 10-year average. And we're also seeing tech perform really well. Last month, the tech sector was up about sort of 20%. And I think although recession risks have risen, we are sort of seeing central banks around the world, outside of the US, continue to lower rates. And I think that will offset any damage from sort of trade and a consumption perspective. So I think from, as I say, when we're looking at markets and it's very forward looking. So I think that we believe that the US economy will be resilient. We're also coming off the back of what is a decent earnings season in the US. And we've still got that AI trade that's still proving to be pretty unstoppable at the moment as well. Company earnings are strong, and I think valuations aren't too excessive as well. So, look, I do think we need something concrete from a trade perspective to keep pushing higher, but I think there's a bigger risk of being out of markets right now than being in them.
You were talking about the potential for lower interest rates around a number of central banks, but then stopped at the US, right? How much has that got to do with inflation fears there? Because we get some US inflation numbers out tonight, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there is a fear that inflation will pick up, but this year we've seen it trending in the right direction. And as I say, other central banks are lowering rates at the moment. What the Fed is doing, they're taking a slightly more cautious approach given this potential impact that we may see from tariffs. Governor Jerome Powell, I think he may have a hard time sort of justifying a restrictive rate policy if we do see inflation moving lower. But what we did do, we did see a strong jobs report last week from the US, which actually gave the Fed a bit more breathing room when it comes to sort of holding off on rate cuts. But I think the worry here for investors is those sort of tariff impacts coming through in US inflation. We are expected to sort of see both headline and core inflation pick up this week as well. And I think if that is the case, it will keep telling us that the Fed's view of sort of sitting and waiting means that, if we continue to see that tariff flow through, we are likely to get sort of fewer cuts coming from the Fed this year.
Looking at the markets today, any company news catching your attention?
I think on the ASX, probably the standout was Zip. That's a share that's done really, really well in the last sort of 12 months. Shares, soaring today, upgrading earnings guidance, strong demand in the US, and that follows a pretty solid report that they brought out in February as well. Internationally, one of the names that really stood out to me was Taiwan Semiconductor. They reported a 40% jump in revenue in May. They're sort of continuing to benefit from this sort of soaring AI demand. I mentioned that sort of AI boom at the moment, and they sort of expect revenue from AI related chips to sort of double this year, right? So we have Microsoft, Google, Amazon, they're all pouring money, billions and billions into new data centers. And that's going to Nvidia, which ultimately means more orders for Taiwan Semiconductor. They are essentially the creator behind the chips that Nvidia creates. So they are sort of continuing to reap the reward from this AI boom.
Okay. What about Bitcoin? It's been flirting with record highs in recent days. It's close to 110,000 US right now. Why, and what's the outlook?
Yeah, so I think a few reasons. Firstly, I mentioned at the start that risk on sentiment, that willingness from Donald Trump to negotiate from a trade perspective, this view of us getting closer to a trade deal. We've also got an improving regulatory backdrop as well. In the US, we've got huge ETF flows coming through, and that comes from that risk on sentiment. And we've also got this growing sort of global liquidity as well. That's what's driven us to, the new high that we had just recently and almost pushing to new highs again as well. So we think that this rally does have more legs because of those sort of points I mentioned. I think the sort of the crucial part to what we're seeing, right now with Bitcoin is that we're seeing a shift in who's buying. This is the first time, I think, for a long, long time where institutional participation is really front and center. Publicly traded companies adopting Bitcoin as part of their treasury strategy. Billions of dollars in allocations, and that's also coming from sovereign wealth funds as well. So what we're really seeing is a huge wave of demand that is chasing a fixed supply. So we believe that there is sort of more upside from here for Bitcoin over the next year.
And finally, what are you telling your clients generally right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yes, so I think we're telling them to be cautiously optimistic. I mentioned earlier that the biggest risk we see is not being in markets. There's always a reason not to be invested. So I think on the optimistic side, Europe is really where we're seeing investors shift. We're expecting to see a big boost to growth from the region in the Eurozone. We're seeing Germany coming back out on a bit of a spending spree after years of not spending, defense and infrastructure. So also seeing strong earnings growth in Europe. But then on the cautious side, I said cautiously optimistic. On the cautious side, we do see a compelling case for that sort of increasing long-term exposure to gold. We do believe gold remains that sort of strategic asset, you know, very core holding in the portfolio that can bring some reassurance to a portfolio, given what we're seeing now in a period that is, I think, marked by lots of uncertainty and obviously continuing shifts from central banks as well. So cautiously optimistic on Europe, a bit of protection in the portfolio coming from gold.
That is Josh Gilbert there from eToro. Don't forget, if you do enjoy the podcast, to give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and to click subscribe.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.